This is Jeff Durbin with Apologia Radio talking to you about realharmony.org. The profanation of marriage is gaining legs within our culture with the homosexual marriage issue. This is, in fact, church, a gospel issue. We must be salt, a preservative. We have to be light on this issue of homosexual marriage, and we do that at realharmony.org.
This is Joy Temby with Apologia Radio, and you guys, it is so important that you pray for a burden for the people in the homosexual community. Then go to realharmony.org and check out the resources we provide to equip Christians on this issue.
This is the Ministry Bear. Here's the issue. The culture has a universal symbol that recognizes homosexual gay marriage. It's an equal sign. You see it everywhere. Until now, the Christian community has not had a symbol that you look at and say, that's harmonious, real biblical marriage. Go to realharmony.org. Buy a sticker. They're $3 a piece. Get your church to buy and buy the truckloads. We have a goal of selling 1 million of them and getting this out to the culture. Church, jump on it. Realharmony.org.
I would say if the authorities didn't want us involved in the public square, they ought not to have crucified Jesus in the public square.
Use humanistic principles.
Well, I would say
the same idea.
I would say
same
end. I would say, what's the problem with stardust bumping into stardust?
In the cosmic picture, none. There's no problem. In the cosmic picture, it won't matter.
No, Mr. President, you are not protecting reproductive freedom. You are authorizing the destruction of freedom for 1 million little human beings every year.
I'm sorry, my friends, but I am tired of seeing Jesus presented as a weak beggar. He is a powerful Savior, and the gospel is not a suggestion, it is a command.
Reverend Mola, don't you sympathize with that?
I sympathize with every single human heart wishing to know the one true and living God, but I believe there's only one way that that can happen, through Jesus Christ, and the gospel is about repenting of sin, not celebrating it.
Right now, you're on the threshold of an amazing adventure. We will explore the spiritual abyss. You have not experienced this before. You're gonna love it.
What's up, y'all? Welcome to Apologia Radio. It's your host, Jeff Durbin. One of your hosts, Jeff Durbin. Get us at apologiaradio.com. You can like the page on Facebook. Go and get in on the interaction. Like the page, Apologia Radio. Share it with your friends, family, and brosifs. This is the show that we say is the gospel heard around the world. And I'm also in the studio today with a man with a very long, flowing, delicious beardness in the studio right in front of me. This is Luke Pearson. What's up, the bear?
What is up?
Our local bear.
I am local, and I am a bear.
Yeah. All right. That's good. Go. That's good. And I'm Kung Fu Kitty.
Yes, that's correct.
All right, there you go. We've just expanded it a bit. And that's a local bear. And we also have Joy Temby, the girl. What's up?
Hey, how's it going?
Joy the girl.
I am a girl.
Yes, you are. The Temby, the girl.
And a Temby.
That's right. That's right. Yep. So you guys can catch back episodes. You can, if you have iTunes, you can subscribe to Apologia Radio on iTunes. Get the back episodes. Lots of really great stuff. We see each show as a very important teaching tool to speak into the culture with the gospel, a biblical worldview to defend the faith. But also, we want to be able to equip Christians. And we really do see each episode as an anchor, something that's sort of a permanent fixed thing to leave a legacy for the gospel. And so I encourage you to go check them out. All of them are relevant. All of them are important. All of them, we might deal with some current event issues in each one, but they're all ultimately timeless because we're dealing with biblical stuff, biblical worldview. And so go check them out. Subscribe on iTunes. Get them for free. Share them with your friends, family. Go to apologiaradio.com. You can hit the share button. Share it on your Facebook. Share it on your Twitter. And that's how it goes. So this is an exciting episode because it's very special. I'm just going to get myself ready.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm going to get myself ready. What am I doing right now?
I don't know.
What am I doing?
He just put on sunglasses.
Yes. And you know why?
Because
we're doing something very, very special today. It's an unusual show. It's not something we would normally do. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. I know what's going on.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Joy, you don't know. I'm ashamed of you right now. I'm very ashamed.
This is the wrong exit for our guest today, though. For
all the ladies I know the song. I'm just slightly creeped out by what's happening.
Hold on, hold on. There's more. Just want to do something special for all the ladies in the world. It's a show for the ladies. And which ladies? Here we go. Don't forget them. Those two. Parisian. And you. Bolivia. Via podcast, Bolivian. Namibia. Oh, yeah.
Eastern Canadian.
Yeah. Republic
of Dominican. Forgot those ones.
All of them. Presbyterian. Is she Presbyterian? I'll bet you she is.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah?
Ish, maybe.
Ish?
I guess we'll find out.
All right, so just, you know, this is Apology Radio, a show dedicated to all the ladies in the world. And it's appropriate because this is now 1360 KPXQ Faith Talk for all the ladies around the world via podcast or all over Arizona. All right, Luke, I'm gonna hand it over to you. All right,
okay,
you go ahead and introduce.
Before I introduce our special guest today, I just want to – I'm just sitting here thinking – how ridiculous our show is, and I was listening to Backpack Radio yesterday. Shout out to Vocab, Pastor V, Vermin, and Pastor Bob, and you know, they're quite a different breed than we are,
right?
And so I was, which by the way, they're probably going to steal our guest after today because I've noticed that they seem to,
when we have a guest, they get him after us,
they copy us,
all right.
But that's okay. It just shows that we're more superior, far superior. But regardless,
Christian radio trash talk.
That's right. Regardless, I noticed they had Joel McDermott on shortly after we did, and Pastor Bob, he's calling him Dr. McDermott, and I'm thinking, he's a doctor? I'm thinking our show. We're like, what's up, Joel? What's up, dog? You know, it's just completely different.
Dr. McDermott. That's all. Yeah, it is. It is.
It's different. Right. I was laughing.
Yeah, loud. Joel's the bomb.
Which then brings me into our special guest. So after we had Joel McDermott on, somebody hit me up on the Facebook page, a woman, a lady, as if you will, and her name is Leah Smith, who I'm going to introduce here. And so she hits me up, and she's like, hey, love your show, and I wrote a book for American Vision called Diapers, Dishes, and Dominion, which came out in 2011. And I'm also a mom, I homeschool, and I'm the lead singer of a metal band. And I was like, what? So anybody that knows me knows I like me some metal. And so I was pretty excited about that. So it's been a while. We've been trying to get her on. So I'm pretty excited. And Jeff was so excited. He was like starting a mosh pit before the show. And he like threw his bracelet through the fifth-story window. I think it hit a pedestrian down below.
Yeah. So the name of the book is
Diapers, Dishes, and Dominion.
All right. Okay, so let's go ahead and bring her on.
Yes, Leah, welcome.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How
awesome.
Are you?
Thanks for
awesome.
Having me.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
So the name of the book is
Diapers, Dishes, and Dominion.
And Dominion. What's up? Yeah. What's up? Okay, so Leah, tell us about yourself. And you're a homeschool mom, a Christian, and a lead singer in a metal band.
That's correct.
And from Canada.
A.
On top of it. A.
A.
Yeah.
Which yeah. is all about
a socialist, believe it or not.
Oh. And she's not socialist.
That's amazing.
Wow.
Yeah.
There we
wow.
go.
I only have one thing to say about the non-socialist. It's a woman show.
Oh my goodness.
I'm sorry.
You just totally offended.
Forgive me.
That was awesome.
I think the question everybody's dying to know right now, are you Presbyterian?
I think that the ish was very appropriate because
amen.
I would just say generally reformed would be a good word to describe.
Right on.
So you're saying you don't dunk your children or sprinkle them, I should say.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
No, actually, no. We're like full on reformed, but
she's like not like you, Luke. You're not really from reformed.
Yeah, it's actually been because we both like my husband and I both have charismatic background. The whole getting into the reformed world was a completely new world for us. So it was kind of a journey, just being introduced to Reformed doctrine, theology. So we're still kind of finding our way around it because there's so much to learn and there's so many good books, and yeah, we're just still figuring it all out.
Well, how'd you get linked up with American Vision though to write that book?
Oh my goodness! I started reading their books, and I was introduced to them through my dad, who actually has met a whole bunch of them, and he had a whole bunch of their books. So I started stealing his books from his library, and then I started ordering my own. And before you know it, through Facebook and stuff, you just start meeting people, and yeah, before you know it, we're friends with the McDermotts, and yeah.
Wow.
Right.
Long story short.
Okay.
That's awesome.
All right. So tell us about your band. Tell us about the music you do.
Wow. I'm just basically the songwriter, and I sing in the metal band.
Well, is this something you're doing? Like, were you when did you come to Christ? I should ask you that. When did God bring you to Himself?
When I was a little girl,
okay.
I was raised in a Christian family. I was raised in the church. So, I didn't really have like a conversion moment per se. It was just, I was brought up and I loved Jesus as a child. So mm-hmm. It's just been, you know, one of those lifetime sanctification things.
Right on. And so you are a singer in a metal band. Was this something you've always been doing, or is it because you're a mom, a homeschool mom, a wife, a believer, and also the singer in a metal band? I mean, how do you blend those things together? Is this something you've always been doing, music, or something you just really all of a sudden develop a passion for, and you really then got into it, or how'd that work out for you?
I've always been a singer. I've always written music since I was like a young teenager. I taught myself piano and guitar and all that. And I was definitely very much involved in music before I got married. And after we got married and we started having kids right away, that definitely was, it kind of just, you know, was not really present in my life at that time, just because, you know, having kids just takes so much dedication.
Mm-hmm.
So, it wasn't until a little bit more in the last couple of years that I really started picking it up again, just as a side hobby. And I got into metal like before I was married, and then I started just writing a little bit more in that direction. I don't myself play guitar, so I would write a lot of piano and just piano songs, and then we would add the guitars and the heavier drums and stuff after the fact. So it was kind of a little bit different situation than coming together with a bunch of other band members and writing it on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
So, just a couple of years ago, I had the opportunity to record an album, and that's when, my husband was like, go for it. Just totally do it. So I was like, I'm gonna.
Awesome. Well, we're going to play some of your stuff when we come back from commercial, but we're about to get into a break right now. I wanted to talk with you when we get back. I wanted to speak with you about the issue of eschatology. You coming from a kind of a defeatist, pessimistic eschatology into the biblical eschatology of optimism and the victory of Christ in history. I want to talk about the effect that's had on you and your life, your theology. So we'll be right back. And this is the show dedicated to the women. Sorry. We'll be right back. ApologiaRadio.com.
Apologia Radio will be right back.
Welcome back to Apologia Radio. This is Jeff Durbin with Luke Pearson and Joy Timby. My level has gone up now.
Your level.
Right now, Luke is lifting Joy above his head, running around the studio. She's crowd surfing in the studio.
Yes.
So they're making fun of me because I was going to the bathroom and they were like, well, keeping with the theme of the woman's show, you're in the bathroom. I was thinking to myself, no, Because if it really was keeping the theme of the women's show going to the bathroom, I would be bringing Luke with me, and we'd be talking about God knows what in the bathroom.
My point was that you were usually, you say some sort of like crass, manly thing about going to the bathroom. But today you were like, I'm going to go to the restroom. You like whispered it into the mic like you didn't want Leah to know.
Okay. Yeah. Well, because she's, we don't, because we're just getting
she's
to know.
She's a girl.
Because we're just getting to know
she's
her.
She's a girl.
It's because.
Cause I'm your
oh my God.
Lady.
What? It's the lady show. I'm sorry. It's a ladies' show.
The music on the show is so whack already.
Yeah, totally off of what we normally
do. All right.
Can I just say, I just want to say that if it was up to Jeff, this show would be called Sprockets.
All techno.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Welcome to Sprockets.
That's right. That's actually true. That's not an exaggeration at all.
Thankfully, I bring some balance and Joy as well. Joy, yeah. Joy enjoys some metal every once in a while.
She does.
So
she enjoys some metal.
We bring the balance. We bring the balance.
So we're back with Leah. Leah, I wanted to talk to you. I'm gonna kind of bow out of this for a little bit here because we've got a lot of questions ready for you. But I did want to address the issue because we're doing a series called Eschaton and Apologia Church on biblical eschatology, the victory of Christ in history. I also came from a background of a really pessimistic, defeatist eschatology, dispensational premillennialism. And you came from a background as well of a defeatist eschatology. And you start your book off really describing that. Could you talk to us about that shift and how that's impacted you coming from a pessimistic view of the future to where you're at today?
Yeah, it was, I had a real fear issue just growing up, and it's something I still deal with, only now that I've been equipped with better theology, I can handle the things that come at me now. Back when I was a teenager, in just different Bible class, and in, because I went to a private school, I was in Bible class, and then in Sunday school and different things, I was exposed to those videos. I forget what some of the names were, but they were like rapture type videos.
Oh,
or
yeah,
the old
rapture movies.
Ones.
Yeah,
what's that?
I said the old rapture movies, like the old old school ones, like the 70s and 80s. Yeah, those are awesome.
Or they were, I forget, there was this one, I think it was actually more of like a historic pre-mill one, so no one got raptured, but everyone got beheaded or something like that.
Okay.
It was
traumatic.
It was a little bit traumatizing.
Yeah, I think so. All right, yeah. So you come from that background. Why the shift? What happened? I mean, give us that, because people are going to say, well, I want to know. Like, what was it that was the mind-changing moment, the transformation moment? Like, what was it? Was it a particular series of did you do a particular study on it? Or how did you shift from a pessimistic view of the future to a biblical eschatology?
There was a moment where I was just so sick and tired of being afraid. It was getting to the point where I was having like nightmares all the time. And at that point we had one child already, and I was just feeling guilty for even having kids.
Wow.
Because I thought, every time I look around, things are just getting worse, and barcodes everywhere.
You're right.
It was getting to the point where I was becoming so paranoid. And then
that's exactly what I went through. That's exactly the same. Okay.
Yeah.
And so then what happened?
And now I'm thinking, some person was just trying to help people organize their inventory in a nice, efficient way. And here I am thinking it's the Antichrist or Mark of the Beast or something. But so I did have a moment where I was so sick of living in fear, and I knew I didn't have any peace. And I knew that, the Bible says that where there's where the Spirit of the Lord is, there's freedom. And I didn't have any freedom. And I just thought that must mean I do not know the truth, because the truth sets you free. And I just don't have any freedom. I don't feel like I'm a Christian living with any kind of liberty or freedom in my life. So I just asked the Lord to show me what the truth is. And I didn't care how much I needed to study. It was something I was so afraid I didn't want to study it. It was that bad. I didn't even want to read the book of Revelation. I wasn't opening the word of God because I was that afraid of what it might tell me. And eventually I ended up voicing it. I was too afraid to even talk about it. So eventually I voiced it. And my dad handed me Last Days Madness by Gary DeMar. He said,
oh,
you've
yeah.
got to read this book. That was it.
Excellent book. Okay, and now, so you move from an eschatology, a view of the future that is pessimistic and defeatist, that yes, Jesus is going to return and be victorious at the end of history, but on the way there, it's going to be just the church defeated. And so that impacts even your view of children and motherhood. Well, tell us just briefly, how has coming to a biblical view of the future and Christ's victory in history, how has it affected your motherhood? I mean, obviously you write a book, but how has that affected now, what you're doing now as a mom and as a believer and as a wife?
Oh, my goodness. It completely changed my world. After, you know, and basically the Last Days Madness book just helped me get into the Bible more. It helped me look at what does the scripture actually say for itself instead of man's interpretation of what the newspaper says. So once that happened and I realized there, you know, we actually have something to build on for the future that, yes, there may be some hard times, like there are in any battle. There's going to be hard times, but ultimately it's going to get better, and that Christ is coming back for a spotless bride, and not a defeated bride. So that outlook completely revolutionized my entire life. For the first time, I actually felt like I'm a Christian. Like yeah. I know what I'm living for now. I know what, like, I can have children and I can train them and we can solve problems in the world and we can, oh my goodness, like life was so exciting for the first time as a believer. And, wow. You know, it's almost sad to say that in certain ways because I'd been a believer my whole life. And this is the first time I actually felt like I had freedom in Christ mm-hmm. and I could do something, like even if it's just being a mother and being dedicated to my family. I actually felt like that was going to make a huge impact in the world. And I went from feeling guilty for even having kids to feeling like we can do so much for the kingdom by having a family and training them up.
Wow, that's significant too. I mean, that resonates with me because that's precisely what I always thought when I came to Christ and I began to study eschatology, Bible college. My first Bible study was on eschatology. I was just looking for a way out. I was constantly looking forward to the every moment, the rapture, when I'd see things collapsing around me. My thought was, and ultimately, you know, be salt to it, be light to it, get into the world and change and transform, leave a legacy. And yeah, I agree with you, Leah. That's exactly the thing is coming to see that Christ is going to be victorious in history has changed my whole view of my kids, my life, my legacy. I'm looking to leave a legacy for 10 generations after me.
Yep.
That's the difference. We'll be right back. ApologiaRadio.com. Hit us up, like us on Facebook. Stay tuned.
Apologia Radio will be right back.
Welcome back to Apologia Radio. This is the local ministry bear, Luke Pearson. This song makes me want to go slam a plate of fish and chips and throw some darts. Just saying.
I'll be too. It's good stuff.
Just saying. You know, I was listening. By the way, this is from Leah's newest album. Her band name is Leah. We haven't even mentioned that. So
we didn't?
No,
okay.
We should. Her band name
We're
is
terrible
Leah.
Terrible hosts.
It's a really creative name. It's called Leah. And I'm just kidding. And the album is Of Earth and Angels. Leah, where can someone find this album?
I'm on iTunes, and you can also go to leahthemusic.com, and I have all the buttons and gizmos and gadgets, Facebook, all that stuff there, and you can also get it, download it for free if you go to the website.
But don't. Go to iTunes and buy it. Give her some money to buy some more maple
You can
syrup.
Donate, too. If you go to leahmusic.bandcamp.com, there's an optional donation button there for people.
You
can do that, too.
I was talking to Leah on Facebook about the show, and I was like, you probably don't even need to buy maple syrup. You just go tap into a tree. And
yeah.
Which
yeah,
I'm jealous.
We're throwing out all the stereotypes.
But I'm jealous
about
women, of
that.
I'm jealous.
Yeah,
okay.
On this show,
jealous.
We love stereotypes.
We love them.
We love them.
Which, by the way, Leah, do you like beards?
Beards?
Yes.
My husband has a nice beard.
Oh, that's excellent.
Excellent. Now we like you even more.
He's going all Duck Dynasty.
Oh,
amen.
Nice.
Amen.
I had my finger on the hang-up button there for a second. She took a long time to answer. Okay, you're welcome. You're welcome to stay.
Would you say that you have a spirit beard, Leo?
A spear beard?
Spirit. Spirit.
Leah, you clearly are not listening to enough Apology Radio.
Joy has a spirit beard. We often talk about the spirit beard.
It was a term I coined a long time ago. It's a female that doesn't have a beard.
It's a female who has an affinity for beards.
Beards and will have one in this life and in the next.
Oh, wow.
Can you imagine everyone in heaven? All the women all of a sudden have beards. That's why there's no marriage in heaven, because it wouldn't work.
This show just took a turn for the worse.
All right, go ahead.
Leah's like, what just happened? What just happened? No, seriously, though.
What did I get myself into?
Yeah, exactly. No, seriously, though, check out her album. Go get it. Pick it up. It's really good. I listened to it. It's not, you're not going to get your aggressive vocals. But I was told that on her new stuff there may be some aggressive vocals, which made me excited. Jeff's looking at me like, I don't even know what that means.
Aggressive vocals.
Leah, by the way, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead. The aggressive vocals wouldn't be done by me, just to clarify.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't sound like you have the pipes for some aggressive vocals. No,
it's all in the technique, but yeah.
Oh, can I share this real fast? I know you got questions. This is crazy. We go on like road trips.
This is what I was gonna say. Here it comes.
We go on road trips, and Luke and his music just kills me. Like, please turn it off, man. I'm begging of you to please turn it off, because we were in the road. It was like.
Okay.
He was like some crazy roar. I was like, dude, please. And he was like, this is holy, 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 dude.
No,
I was like, what?
Oh, no, my gosh. This story gets more exaggerated every time. Listen, I played.
Yeah, the eating noises were new.
I played Becoming the Archetypes, How Great Thou Art. Have you heard that, Leah? That song?
I don't know if I have. I've heard of the band, though. It's like Angry Cookie Monster, right?
Yeah, kind of. It's amazing. It's amazing, and he's playing like ints ints holy holy ints ints like
fuck
you know
the
like
I need to like sprockets.
I feel like I need to strip down my underwear and put a pacifier in my mouth.
I just is Hans Klug. Oh, wow. Welcome to Sprockets.
Anyways, check out Leah's album, and I will say that this is how I describe Leah's album. If you, for all my nerds out there, if you were to like go down to Rivendell and go see a metal show in Rivendell, like the elves would, this would be Leah's band. Like, I feel like it should be the soundtrack to Lord of the Rings, which is awesome.
I didn't understand any of that.
You're too cool.
You did
Sorry.
Understand. You did
You're way
understand
too cool.
what I said.
If Middle Earth had distortion, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Right.
See, she gets it.
Okay.
So we just
wait till you hear my new stuff. Like, it's like that, but on steroids.
I can't wait. When is... Okay, so we have a minute left.
We just blew through that entire segment. Yeah, okay, welcome to Apology Radio.
That got a little loose there.
That's okay. I wanted to spend some time talking about
her music.
Real quick, where can people get your book, Diapers, Dishes, and Dominion?
Oh, at AmericanVision.org.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Check it out.
So, by the way, American Vision is our sponsor of the show.
Yeah.
And so go to the American Vision, AmericanVision.org, or go to AmericanVision.com. I think AmericanVision.com is the actual bookstore, and AmericanVision.org is where we can do the blogs and everything else. But you need to love American Vision. They are one of my favorite ministries in the world. They are my favorite ministry in the world. We'll be right back talking about Diapers, Dishes, and Dominion. What? What does that even mean?
Triple D.
And so if you want to know, you're going to hang with us. Joy the Girl is going to chop it up with Leah right after this.
Radio. We'll be right back.
Oh, that's good, dude.
Yeah.
Because she's from Canada.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Apologia Radio. Get us at our Facebook page and like it. share with your friends, family, Rosifs, and I want to encourage you guys to go over to get Diapers, Dishes, and Dominion by Leah Smith. And I want to make sure you guys know the address, AmericanVision.com. Go get the book and pick it up. Awesome, awesome discussion we're going to have today. I'm going to really just kind of hand it right over to Joy right now. Joy the girl. I'm going to let you right now chop it up. Which you had a problem with that. You were saying...
Well, no, I was just saying it doesn't really jive with the whole like stereotype thing. Because I don't know if women typically chop it up.
Well, you can...
When they talk.
You can chat it up.
Nice.
Good all right, Joy, go ahead. It's all you.
Okay, well, first of all, I noticed that, Jeff, the only Canadian stereotype you have is A.
So, A?
Hoser.
So, Leah, are there any other stereotypes that we should know about so we can use them against you?
Well, we do say A a lot. I'm going to give you credit for that because okay, that is totally true.
I'm proud of myself.
There's a lot of, I don't know, Canadian beer is not, I don't know, it's not that great, personally. That's just me.
Yeah.
But bacon, maple syrup, I don't know, hockey.
Socialist, yep. Anti-Christian governments. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Did I say that loud in the microphone? All right, Joy, it's all you. But before you do.
Oh, my goodness.
You have another lady song, I'm sure.
Oh, no, it's not. It's never mind. Okay,
I thought you were turning this right over to Joy.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead, Joy. It's all you.
Now it's on. Now it's all me.
I'm out of the way.
Joy has some great questions, by the way. I'm super excited for
this. Not even here.
Okay, all right. So this show has been a little crazier than it normally is. Leah probably thinks we're insane, but we're going to shift gears now and talk more about your book, Leah, and kind of the content. We already talked about, you do talk about eschatology in your book, and I know you kind of start your book out that way, just talking about how that your improper view of eschatology really formed how you were a mom and a wife. But then in the rest of the book, you really get into what it means to be a mom and a wife biblically. So I guess just tell us a little bit about, I mean, we kind of already talked about how you got to writing the book, but what really inspired you to write the book, not just about eschatology, but about the whole momhood and wifehood, wifery. What do you call that?
Wifery. I like that.
That is awesome.
Wifery.
That sounds very metal.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, if you just want to tell us kind of how you got there.
Yeah, I decided to write something because I was very irritated whenever I'd walk into a Christian bookstore and all I would see was it was either self-help crap or else it was like end of the world type books. And then there was just all this fluff on the bookshelves.
Yes.
And it was very, I don't know, every time I walk in there and I would just think, somebody needs to write a book about this. And then one day I just thought, I don't know, maybe I should do it. I don't know if I'm definitely not an expert, but I can write about the things that I've learned. So I might as well go for it. So I started writing.
Well, cool. To all the ladies, since this is a ladies show out there that are listening, I would really suggest this book because it takes a lot of deep, heavy theological issues and it kind of just simplifies them. But there's verses throughout. It's really, really great content and it's an easy read. It's not, I would especially say if you have a lot of kids, it'd probably be something you could easily kind of pick up and put down as your day gets busy or if there's lulls in the day or whatever. But anyway, I have a few questions that I know at Apologia Church right now we're doing the married women are doing a marriage study. There's a bunch of questions in my mind floating around and within our church, within the women, just questions floating around that we haven't really ever been taught the answers to. And it's kind of crazy because you grow up in church. I was raised in church too. And you're taught the world's view of feminism as opposed to what I guess biblical feminism for a lack of a better term would be. But you're essentially kind of adopt the roles that the world has for women as opposed to what the Bible calls for women to be. So if you want to, before we really get into any major questions, maybe you could just tell us a little bit about your role as a mom and a wife. And I really like in your book where you have like your little mission statement that you keep like taped on your fridge. Mm-hmm. So if, I mean, if you even want to go through that a little bit, to just kind of explain when we say biblical woman, what we mean here on the show.
Yeah. Basically, I think our society, the secular society, has tried to redefine terms, right? And we see that even in the laws that are passed, like trying to define what is a family, what is a, you know, they don't want to use the terms even mother and father anymore. And what is it, the state of California, something like that. They just want parent because they're trying to redefine everything. They yeah. want to redefine what marriage is. They want to redefine what the family is, what even boy and girl is. They want to just completely change the meanings of words. And it's a silent sort of revolution that happens. And so like you said, like then the church, because we've kind of been on the defense and kind of forfeited that battle, we have somehow adopted those secular definitions of those words. And before you know it, we're wondering what is what anymore and how do we even be a Christian in today's society? So when it comes to being a mother and a wife, it's important to just go back to the Bible because there's always going to be timeless principles in there that we can apply and adopt in any culture, in any society for all of eternity. So to be a mother and a wife, we go to the patterns of Scripture. And it can be a little tricky trying to figure out how do we apply some of that when we have, you know, two income families and we have single mothers and we have this and we have that. And it's really an opportunity for the church to step up in that area and help us figure these things out. So, where else were you wanting me to talk about that?
Well, I was just going to say like when you're at home, I know you talked a lot about, your role as a mom and what you are to do for your children, sort of the sacrifice that you make for them. And then also talk about like submission to your husband and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So just elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah, the mission statement is a really important thing. And I kind of got the idea from a couple other blogging moms out there who were doing similar things. And it just kind of helps give me a bit of a focus when I'm the type of person, I get a little overwhelmed by life, by details, and by things going on in the world. I tend to just kind of forget, and I need to go back to the basics all the time. So writing out what my purpose is and just my, it's kind of like short-term, mid-term, long-term. My short-term purpose is, yes, I need to do the things around the house that need to be done. I need to cook meals and take care of kids. But why am I doing that? There's a bigger purpose in that because even unbelievers can do those things. So it's got to be done with purpose and with strategy and with a bigger picture in mind and a long-term vision. And it's through doing those things that I'm spending time with them and ministering to my husband, ministering to my kids. We're sowing seeds of godliness. We are imparting biblical solutions that they can then take out into the world and apply. Character development. There's so many things that happen in a day, and if I'm not focused and actually really just concentrating on those things happening during the day, it's easy for life to just happen, and then it's not really purposeful.
Yeah, there's no intention or anything behind.
Exactly.
You're living. Yeah, that's great. What would you, I know you talk a lot about this in your book, but you talk about sort of the world's view of someone that, like a submissive wife and maybe even a family that has like four or more kids. Oh my gosh, what? No,
yeah.
Just kidding.
Yeah.
But just, I know you talk about that. If you want to talk about that on, you know, here a little bit, that'd be great.
You mean, so, the part where it's about, like, people's view of having...
Well,
Can I just say something? I think that would be interesting to me. Joy brought that question. It was really cool you brought that up. Just the issue of, like, society sees, like, a woman like yourself that's, like, dedicated to her family and, like, leaving a legacy and, like, just, like, seeing dishes and diapers as a whole different thing. Submission to your husband, biblical. They would see you as, like, this old school, like, you know, Mrs. Beaver. Cleaver? Is it Cleaver?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Cleaver.
Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever the name is.
Yeah.
Old school 50s show, Shyamalama. Anyway, so, like, talk about that. Like, how does your mission statement, like, involve that? Like, the real, like, biblical model of wife versus how the world sees it. I'm curious about that.
We face it all the time with culture's view on children, and even within the church, all the time. I just run into people who just have a negative view of children, or see them, like, the more kids you have, you know, they equate that with poverty or something, or they equate that with irresponsibility. They don't equate it with godly dominion, and they don't equate it with generational blessing. They just see it as, we've been kind of trained, brainwashed in a sense, to think of children as a curse and not a blessing. So there's that.
Well, and what you talked about in your book is just that a lot of this reaction that you get from people is within the church. And that just kind of proves that we as like in the church have adopted this idea that, like, you know, the woman and the man are equal, or the woman is the man. Vodi Bakum says that we're currently raising men that are biologically capable of having children.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think that that's really powerful. But I think that the fact that there is so much of that response, even in the church, just shows that the church has no idea what the biblical model of family is even supposed to look like. So in your book, you kind of outline that about, like, how many kids you're supposed to have and when you're supposed to get married and all this stuff. So if you want to kind of go into that a little bit with some verses accompanied, I know you have them, so go ahead.
Yeah, there's definitely not a specific number of how many kids you're supposed to have. The Bible just says, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth, take dominion. And it just says that people who have kids are blessed, and who wouldn't want blessing, right?
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of changing our attitude and our motive. Mm-hmm. There's some people God withholds children from. So I think we need to just think biblically about it. It's not, there's not a certain number or anything like that. Mm. And also as far as, the biblical role of the wife and submission. Again, like you said, people kind of look at that like old school, like you're a prairie muffin or whatever you want to call it.
Awesome.
Great, totally
great
awesome.
For dresses.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Prairie muffin.
Yeah, but
I'm writing this down.
And what's that?
He said he's writing it down. He likes that term.
Oh, yes. I think I'm not positive, but I think Gary Norris might have coined that term, prairie muffin.
I like it.
Yeah,
that's great.
But as far as like biblical submission and everything, I think we don't even know what that even means anymore. And personally, for me, I'm a perfect candidate for being, you know, I was a perfect candidate for being scared off to become a mother and a wife, because I come from a family of divorce. My parents were divorced when I was a young child. I was maybe 10. And there was a lot of church turmoil going on and all that. So I never really grew up seeing what a proper, healthy family should even look like. I never got the homeschooling thing. I never saw how really a wife should respect her husband. I never saw how a husband should love his wife. I never had any example of that. So this has all been a very terrifying experience for me.
Leah, I'm going to talk about that. We're going to be right back after this break. We're going to get more of Leah here talking about this issue of submission, family, motherhood, and dominion. ApologiaRadio.com.
How many books do you know of that address topics of education and welfare, local government, state government, taxation, money and banking, free markets, courts, war and the military, and the executive power? How many books do you know actually talk about these topics from a biblical perspective and set forth all of the issues, ideas, the history, and the hurdles, and the blueprints for the way forward? Hi, I'm Joel McDermott with AmericanVision.org. In Restoring America One County at a Time, I cover all these topics and more, showing you how America was once free how those freedoms were lost, and giving you an uncompromising biblical approach to get those freedoms back. I focus on practical steps, local solutions, personal sacrifices, and it has a multi-generational vision. So don't just sit around talking about restoring America. Actually do something. And you can start by getting my book, Restoring America, One County at a Time, at AmericanVision.org.
Lover, come to me. I've been waiting so long. Here on the mainland, storms are raging. Oh, so lonesome for you.
Welcome back to Apologia Radio. Get us at ApologiaRadio.com. This is the gospel heard around the world. Jesus is the Lord of glory and the Lord of these airwaves. Talking with Leah today about her book, Diapers, Dishes, and Dominion. That was a good song, by the way. Loved it. And I'm going to turn it back over to Joy. Joy, just dig in some more. Help us. I mean, you were excited about this episode. You had all kinds of questions prepared. I want you to, from the female perspective, get into what you think the ladies need to know and the guys.
Yeah. Well, at the very end of the last segment, you were talking about kind of your fears about getting married and having kids. And I think that that is a big part of why people aren't doing those things now, is because they had a bad experience with them. So that kind of leads me to a question that I've had that I've been thinking about, just to get your take on it. I'm wondering, what are a few ways that you think that Christians have kind of allowed secular society to change what marriage is, as far as, like, you know, people deciding to cohabitate instead of get married, or not have kids, or only have a certain amount of kids? What are a few things that you've noticed that Christians have allowed? Because marriage is a biblical term. It doesn't really apply anywhere else outside of...
Absolutely.
You know, so how have we kind of let society's view of marriage change marriage? I would say Christian marriage, but there's no such thing as Christian marriage. It's just marriage.
Amen.
But so, yeah, I just want to get your take on it. Maybe a few things that you've noticed in talking with people and writing the book.
Yeah, you mentioned a couple of things there, and I totally agree. First of all, we've let the world define what marriage is. We've let them, we've let the government take over something that God originally ordained. So, I think as soon as you get the government defining things, we're in big trouble. You know, you can have someone marry a goat, and they're going to think that's marriage. You know, this is absolutely ridiculous. This is something that is defined by God and no one else. So there's that problem. There's issues with, like you said, the cohabitation thing, huge. There's so many people calling themselves Christians that are cohabitating, and, you know, they just want to play house, and they don't want to actually commit because they had a bad experience, maybe, or their parents were divorced, or they just, you know, it is freaky because you just see divorce absolutely everywhere around you in the church. I feel like, almost feel like it's consuming. Like there's just, it seems like there's just as much divorce in the church as there is in the world. And that's just terrifying to me, because I've seen a lot of it in my family. So, yeah, it's a sore spot for a lot of young people wondering, like, do I get married? Do I just not? Do I half commit? And then people are afraid to have kids because, you know, if they were a child who went through divorce, they know how painful that is. I'm still dealing with my parents' divorce. It's something you never quite heal from. It just kind of goes, you know, it's not like maybe you need therapy or anything, but you just, there's this a pain that never goes away because God said, what he has brought together, let no man separate. And when you separate it, there's going to be pain, and it's going to leave a massive scar.
Mm. Yeah.
So.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's just a huge thing that's going on that I see. And then some people are just not settling down at all, right? They don't even really want to go there.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, I think there is a lot of fear there. And then again, like we said, there's this, we've totally bought into the idea of, you know, what the world says that marriage is. And I think the church has definitely, has definitely bought into that. And it's, I think it's crazy that people, when they hear of, you know, how Jeff's family is, how your family is, and they just think like, oh my gosh, that's just crazy old school. That's just doormat women. So if you want to address that issue a little bit, can you please tell me how you are not a doormat, but you're still submissive?
Yeah, if anybody has ever met me, they would know that I'm not a doormat. I haven't met too many women who are doormats. I'm sure they exist out there, but all the women I know are all very opinionated. They're all very, very, you know, outgoing people who have their own ideas, and submission is a problem. I haven't met too many women who submit too much.
Yeah.
I just haven't come across it. Yeah.
It's like you never have to teach your kids to be mean.
From the Garden of Eden.
Sorry. I said it's like you never have to teach your kids to be mean. You never have to teach women to not be submissive.
Exactly.
I'd like to know more about that. The issue of, I mean, people are going to think when they hear you homeschool mom, Christian wife, you know, highlighting submission, they're going to think you sound something like one of these old, oh, it doesn't get number one. There's old commercials, like, you know, the black and white, the woman submitting to her husband. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't like it. The old Folgers commercials are awesome.
Yeah.
They
oh,
are
yeah.
like he doesn't like
husband
his coffee.
Comes home, you have a drink in your hand.
Right.
Like,
yeah. Honey, your coffee is terrible. Oh, Arthur, really? Like, you know, like the so talk about that. I'm curious about that. Like, how are you promoting that? And like, what do you want women to know about that? The submission and the Christian woman at home, like not being a doormat, but yet being in submission to her husband. I'm curious as to how you articulate that.
Yeah, I think that being submissive is more of it's a heart issue, and you know, you have personalities and stuff. All the women I know have very dominant type personalities, and that's not really the issue. The issue isn't be quiet, don't talk, or, you know, don't have an opinion on life. That's not what the Bible is talking about. It's more of, there's a lot of pastors who have described it really well. Doug Wilson and some of his books and stuff do quite a good job. And it's, you know, you're equal in your roles, but when it comes to certain things, the husband has, he's the head, he's the leader. So, and the leader is consulting he's consulting the wife continually. I mean, they make probably most decisions together, but there's a submission factor there where, you know, something comes up and a final decision has to be made, and God has called the husband to make that decision. He's called the husband to be the leader. So I just don't think it's a good idea to argue with God about it. There's consequences, right?
Yes, definitely.
We're trying to rebel against that, so...
Yeah. Well, and I like what you had to say in your book about where, I mean, the original first woman that ever was, Eve, you talked about how, you know, before there was sin, they would have been, like, the perfect couple. She would have been the perfect helpmate, and she certainly wouldn't have been, like, you know, this doormat that just did everything, and, like, you know, Adam would... have her make sandwiches and like get him beer and stuff while he watched football. I don't know who was playing at that time, but but you know, I really like, you have a lot of great stuff like that to say in the book. It's an excellent book. I really liked how you went back to the very, very beginning. I have a few other questions if you're so inclined.
Sure.
They're just, again, this is something I've been thinking about quite a lot. You brought up Doug Wilson. I believe Nancy Wilson wrote the book that the women, the married women, are going through right now in church. But so we've all kind of been, you know, have questions buzzing around our heads. But one of my questions, I'm single, I'm not married, and I'm not a mom. So I kind of wonder, I think that a lot of single women will hear this message that we're promoting and they'll go, oh, what? So like, I'm not a complete woman until I'm married or have a mom. And then if you want to address that. And then I also wonder, biblically speaking, because of the roles that women have, are women ever called to be single, or are just men called to be single?
Yeah, my understanding is that it's not limited to men. I'm sure, I mean, if you're going to have men called to be single, I'm sure there's going to be some women called to be single. But my understanding is that it would be an exception, not normative.
Yeah.
And that most people are called to be married. It says in the Bible that it's better to marry than to burn with passion. And there's a reason for that. And so, yeah, I think there are probably some people, but I think it's more of a gift and a specific calling. Like probably if they were devoted to, I don't know, some kind of special ministry or whatever it might be. But majority of people are probably, they should be married.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. And there are a few, I think there's a lot of reasons why nowadays people aren't getting married that are not biblical. Mm-hmm. People are saying, oh, I'm called to be single. And it's for reasons that aren't, that are kind of self-seeking, things like that. And you go over that in your book, too. My next question for you is, are we supposed to raise our daughters to be housewives?
I wouldn't maybe put it like that exactly, but like, what do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be a housewife, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know that that's how I would put it, but raising my daughters to be familiar with their role as a wife and a mother, absolutely. And that was something that I didn't have. And so now I'm trying to figure it all out now. And I can tell you it's really stressful trying to figure out how do I do this? I don't know. I don't know how to multitask. I never, you know, I had one sister, didn't have any other siblings. So kids, I didn't even like kids. Now I got four of them. So this is completely new territory for me. And it has been a real struggle for me to just embrace it, embrace the role, and then also figure out what works and what doesn't work in a practical sense. And then on top of it, I'm trying to, you know, have this godly vision of what I'm supposed to do with them all now. Okay, I can, it's one thing to procreate. It's another thing to actually raise them in a covenant and teach them what they're supposed to do for Christ with their lives. So raising my daughters to have those things, I think if they were prepared, you know, by their teen years, and they fully understood what God wanted them to do, as far as that role goes, life will be so much easier for them.
Yeah, well, I've heard it put in many circles as far as, like, the homeschooling idea, this idea of learning, like, history, art, like, accurate history.
Right.
It's, I've heard many people say it's like training two generations. They're learning it all themselves, the parent, and then they're teaching it to the kid. So it sounds like that sort of situation that you're in currently, now. You're teaching yourself and your kids.
That's an awesome point. That's really good. We'll be right back talking more about diapers, dishes, dominion, homeschooling, and wifery.
Apology. Right back.
Welcome back to Apologia Radio, right here, KPXQ 1360, Faith Talk, with Luke Pearson, Joy Timby, on the radio today, interviewing Leah, Christian, wife, homeschool,
Canadian,
mama, Canadian, author of Diapers, Dishes, Dominion. And Joy, I'm going to hand it over to you because I'm curious about that, so go ahead and jump back in with Leah here.
Okay, well, obviously the last bit of the title of your book is Dominion, Diapers, Dishes, and Dominion. And so I know that we talked a little bit earlier about your now biblical eschatological views.
Very good.
Yeah,
nicely
I did
noted.
That.
Yes.
And,
that was me.
But with that, kind of, you know, in the beginning of your book, you talk about how your biblical view of eschatology really highlights the dominion that God has given us. And I just kind of want I want you to talk about that a little bit and talk about what that looks like, being a mom and a wife.
Yeah, dominion is basically, you could almost use it synonymously with stewardship. So it's like taking responsibility in an area and maximizing its efficiency. It's just taking responsibility for it and making sure it's like running well. So God has called us to be stewards of this earth and that in everything. So, and that doesn't mean like some kind of weird top down government where Christians take over the world with like AK-47s, not talking about that. And that's what some people kind of misconstrue it as. But no, it's a personal, it's actually very, very decentralized, people taking responsibility for them, for their lives and for their families and church, churches running well. And when you have individuals, running their lives by God's word and by the laws of God, then you have really stable families. And when you have really stable families, you're going to have stable churches. And when you have stable churches, you have a stable society. Even if not every single person in that society is saved, it's going to be really stable. And so part of that process is beginning in the home. And so I have to run my home well, and I have to take dominion in my home. Mm. And that means it all ends up coming back down to self-discipline, self-control, self-responsibility. And even deeper in that, it's going to be my personal, my spiritual walk with the Lord, and being faithful in the small things.
Yeah, well, and it really seems like, and at least as far as your book goes to say, it kind of seems like the revelation of that dominion to you is kind of cast out a lot of the fear that you had. I guess that's when you realize biblical eschatology and what's really going to happen and what your worldview should really, you know, currently look like, you realize you have that dominion. And it seemed like, you know, when you felt that and you realized that that was God's promise for you, that it kind of seemed like that cast out some fear in your life. Is that true, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because I was raised to believe that Satan basically runs the show. Yep. And that everything that's happening is all part of Satan's plan, not part of God's plan. Or maybe ultimately it's God's plan in that at the very end he'll be victorious, but from now until that point, it's Satan pretty much running the show. Mm. And so, it just, what a burden to have, knowing that you might go through this life and that your kids might suffer under Satan's rule. It was just a terrible way to live. And I can see that Satan is more than happy for people to believe that, because it keeps them up in chains. And when you're not free, you're not taking dominion in the world. If you think Satan's running the show, why would you raise your children to have a mind for politics or, you know, business or anything like that? Right. Because there's no point.
Yeah, there's really no legacy to be left or anything, because everything is just going downward. There's no point. Okay, well, do you guys have any questions?
Leah, this is the part that fascinates me the most is, I mean, you take the bold step of putting the word dominion on the title of your book. Well, can you just, I want you to speak to the moms. When you say dominion here, how do you like view that with your kids? Like, in what way do you work towards having rule over God's creation and what God's given you, dominion, and then even moving that onto your kids' lives? So, I mean, this is obviously a huge topic, but like, if you can give like someone like a condensed answer, what would it look like for a mom to take dominion with her kids?
Dominion in that setting is basically running your home well, running your, and again, it always goes back to the individual and the relationship with the Lord and obeying Him first and foremost. And so if I'm obeying God, that means I'm embracing my role as wife and mother, and I'm embracing my ministry, and that's the primary ministry of my life. And that means I'm going to be raising my children to love the laws of God. And that, and how is that going to look? How can I teach my children the laws of God if I give them to someone else for most of the day, right? So it starts working itself out logically, and I'm not saying every situation and every family is gonna work out the same way logically. There's a number of different ways it can work out, but the important thing is being faithful. So dominion is basically stewardship, and it's personal responsibility. I think that's the easiest way to define it. And taking as much responsibility on as possible the way God has laid it out in the Bible.
Okay. And so when you think about, like, you're raising your kids as a homeschool mom, you're trying to glorify God with your life as a good mother, as a good wife. When you think about your kids, and do you view now your children as your legacy for the gospel? Is that central for you, that, like, you view, like, your life and ministry as a gospel-centered focus of life, and, like, imparting that into your children for generations and beyond? Do you view that like that when you think of dominion?
Oh, totally. Yeah, because that's what God promised. He promised to 1,000 generations, right? And
right.
There's some contingencies on that, in that parents have to love the Lord and love His ways. They have to obey His commands, and He's promised to 1,000 generations. And I don't know how many generations we're at right now, and I don't necessarily think that's literal. It could just mean for a long, long, long time.
Right.
But generation after generation, I mean, it says the earth will be filled with the knowledge as the waters cover the seas, not filled with the knowledge of the Lord. So part of that is starting in the home, and that legacy. My favorite legacy, as far as like a family dynasty goes, is the Guinness dynasty. I just love that story. The original Guinness family, they took out a 1,000-year lease on the land and started the Guinness beer business, and it's still going today. And I just love that. I mean, that's kind of like more on the business side of things, but I like, we don't think of that in spiritual terms,
right?
Or in, you know, physical kingdom terms either.
Leah, you've been awesome. A
yes.
Huge blessing. Everyone get her stuff. Download her stuff via iTunes. Leah, we love you. Thank you for joining us on Apologia Radio today.
Thank you for having me. It was awesome.
I look forward to having you again, hopefully.
Bye.
ApologiaRadio.com, guys. Get it.
We'll be right back.
ApologiaRadio.com. Get us on our Facebook page. Like it. Join the movement, y'all. Lots of stuff coming up. I want to encourage you guys to get over to ApologiaRadio.com. Get on the page and join this movement. We have till June 10th, right? That's the deadline.
Correct.
June 10th. We're trying to get 100 of our listeners and our followers and co-laborers to join with us in prayer and giving a $50 a month donation. 100 followers nationwide. We have like 800 people on our page, 100 of us to get together in this, to get the gospel into the culture, to raise the level of impact that Apologia Radio has into the culture. And so join with us. Please prayerfully consider joining with us. I want to now get into a really important discussion, quickly, short segment. This week we had, this past week, Gosnell, Kermit the Killer, Kermit the Assassin, Gosnell, murderer of thousands of children before God, a murderer, and again, murderer of thousands, was tried, was convicted, received in conviction, not the death penalty, but 3 life sentences. For an old man, that didn't sound all too bad, but this is the Philadelphia District Attorney on Gosnell's sentencing.
Today marks the end of a long, sad chapter in Philadelphia's history. But as a result of the hard work of our prosecution team, the Philadelphia Police Department, the DEA, the grand jurors, and the 12 men and women of the trial jury, Kermit Gosnell will never kill another baby. He will never kill another woman seeking his medical assistance.
Seeking his medical assistance. This is why there's no victory here.
Right.
There's no victory here. Christians, don't get too out of control in celebration over this fact. This is not a victory. We should not settle for a substandard application of justice. When our culture is still talking about a murderer like Gosnell in a sense of women coming to him for medical advice, he doesn't give medical advice or medical procedure. He kills babies. He's a hired assassin. We didn't win anything here.
His incompetence will never permanently maim another teenager. And squirming, crying, breathing infants will never again have their spines severed by his scissors. Any doctor who cuts into the necks, severing the spinal cords of living, breathing babies who would otherwise survive with proper medical attention is a murderer and a monster.
Even if they weren't outside the womb, 6 inches out, squirming and breathing, it's still a murderer and a monster.
Right.
In the womb or out, this is why I say, you know, yes, he's in jail, prison. Yes, he has life in prison, 3 life sentences, interestingly, even though he only has 1 life, and he won't get out. But the point is that look at how the people spin this, even in calling this a victory. It just doesn't work.
I hope that the family and friends of Kermit Gosnell's victims will be able to feel a small sense of justice with the resolution of this case.
No. Justice, no. Here's why I say no. Because God tells us what justice is here, okay? Genesis 9:6, whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed, for God made man in his own image. That's, by the way, pre-Sinai. Get that? That's pre-Moses and the law of God and the civil sanctions. God says, this is it. You murder, you lose your life as well. Whoever strikes a man so that he dies shall be put to death. Exodus 21:12. The Bible speaks very clearly. Exodus 21:23 through 25 talks about life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. By the way, that's in civil magistrate. When Jesus corrects them in the Sermon on the Mount, he wasn't saying, oh, here's a change of law now. They were abusing the civil magistrate's laws, and they were applying it to mob justice. So Jesus saying, no, you don't behave that way. But that doesn't mean that the civil magistrate's law of life for life doesn't no longer apply. It's not like all of a sudden we look at the law of God in the Old Testament and we say, oh, that was not really a good version of justice. Let's create a new one. Hebrews 2 talks about how in the Old Testament, everyone received a just recompense. Did you get that? Hebrews chapter 2, everyone received in the Old Testament a just recompense. Who are we to say in our society to God, your law wasn't really good, wasn't really just? Because you know what we have now? Kermit Gosnell, murderer of thousands of babies, convicted on the murder of only a few, which is interesting, by the way. He now, watch this, the taxpayers of his society are going to have to now, by coercion, have money stolen by coercion from them to pay for the meals, to pay for the health care and the shelter of this man for the rest of his life. He commits murder, and the society now pays a criminal price for it. He's the criminal, and now society robs from everyone else to pay for this man's life when he murdered babies. And by the way, he's essentially kidnapped for the rest of his life because God says what is just is to have the civil magistrate take his life for the murder of these babies. And now he's been kidnapped for the remainder of his life. This is not justice. Keep fighting, Christians. ApologiaRadio.com.
We'll be right back.
Luke, I am not your father. You are listening to Apologia Radio. Here are your hosts, Luke Bearwalker.
I'll never turn to the dark side.
J2D2. And J3TO.
Use the comm link. Oh, my.
Welcome back, ApologiaRadio.com. Join the movement, guys. Go to ApologiaRadio.com. Get on the page and commit with us as co-laborers to get the gospel into the culture. We're looking for 100 of our fans, followers, to join with us to get the gospel into the culture. Pastor Luke, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Real quick, I forgot to mention, I got to do a quick shout-out in keeping with the international theme today. This show is going international.
Amen, it is.
We had a Canadian on. I need to give a shout-out to George and Jeremy from Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico.
Oh my gosh.
Is that what they do there? Okay, go ahead. We like stereotypes.
Yes.
Okay, let's go.
I promise to shut up. Anyways, all right. I am excited now. I did a prank call last week
to
a pastor. I'm going to play here in a second. This is a dear friend of mine I've known for years. His name is Matt Baxter. He is the youth pastor at Village Church in Dyer, Indiana. He got pranked. and I forgot to pull it up. Sorry. Talk.
Okay. And so this is, well, who's your character here?
Oh, his name is Ronald Donald.
Ronald Donald. Oh my goodness. It should be obvious immediately. Ronald Donald.
I had a whole thing behind it, but I didn't get to tell the story. But anyways, here it is.
Village Church, this is Matt.
Is this Pastor Matthew?
Yes.
Hi, Pastor Matthew. My name's Ronald Donald Jr. How are you today, sir?
Good. How are you?
Good. Hey, I'm glad I caught you. I actually tried to call last week, but I wasn't able to get through. Anyways, I'm actually new into town, and I visited a few weeks ago with my children.
Okay.
Their names are Ronald the Third and Daisy.
Okay.
They're 14 and 16. You're the youth pastor, correct?
Yes.
So you would be working with them?
Correct.
That's awesome. Do you still have a beard, Matthew? I saw you a few weeks ago. Seemed like you had a beard.
Yeah, unfortunately, no, I don't. It's gone.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. I'm quite a fan of nice beards. I noticed a little bit of salt and pepper in that beard.
Yeah, quite a bit.
Well, it was glorious. It was very distinguishable.
Yeah, it will be missed.
Oh, that's unfortunate. If you don't mind me asking, how old are you, Matthew?
36.
36. How are you feeling these days, Matthew?
Most of the time, pretty good.
That's great. I'm 45, but sometimes I feel like I'm 65.
I can relate.
Do you enjoy running around with the kids and acting a fool?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's great. I'm glad to hear that. I used to be a youth pastor myself, Matthew, about 20 years ago, and I really, really enjoyed it, but long story short, basically I got really depressed and I started to eat too much and I couldn't stop eating. I basically, you know, hate everything in sight. So I gained so much weight, like about 100 pounds in 2 years, I could no longer keep up with the youth.
I can see where that would be a problem.
Yeah, I felt it was necessary to resign. So I went from about 6 foot, 200 pounds to a svelte 300 pounds, just like that, lickety split. You follow me?
Yeah, that would cause a problem.
Yeah, so now I sit behind a desk and sell insurance. It's boring, but it doesn't require much physical activity. I can write an insurance policy like nobody's business, but I can't seem to get this perpetual slice of ham off the roof of my mouth.
Nice.
Yeah, so anyways, well, I really wanted to just chat with you to get to know you a little better before I brought my kids.
Okay.
So your name's Matthew, correct? What is your last name?
Baxter.
Okay, excellent. What should I call you? What do you go by, Matthew?
Most people just call me Matt.
Oh, okay, excellent. I'll keep calling you that then. Sorry about that. I was just calling you Matthew to be polite.
No problem.
I used to, when I was a youth pastor, I had lots of nicknames. You can just call me Ronald or Ronnie if you like. Like I said, I was a youth pastor, I had several nicknames, like Ronnie D., Ron, Ron DMC, and naturally, Rev Ron. I thought that one was pretty clever.
Ron DMC.
That is a good one.
But my son Ronald III goes by Ronnie, or Trey, because he is the third. But more recently, because of that one football player, his friends call him RD3.
Nice.
And my daughter, she just goes by Daisy.
Keep it simple.
Yeah, exactly. So you have an interesting accent, Matthew. Are you're not from Indiana, I take it?
No, from Georgia.
Georgia. Oh, I love Georgia. I've been there before. They have lots of peaches. Millions of peaches. Millions for me. Millions of peaches. Peaches for free. Do you remember that song, Matthew?
It is a good one.
I love that song, and I love peaches. I once ate a whole bushel in about 2 hours, if you follow me.
Yeah. It's going through them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, can I ask you a question, Matthew? Do you think I'm gluttonous? I know it's kind of a weird and personal question to ask you. I'm just so hungry sometimes that I can't stop eating.
Could be a problem, yeah.
I've been brought before three separate churches before gluttony. It was quite embarrassing, and, well, I just couldn't stop. And, you know, I've had to leave three churches, and, you know, my kids, they just suffer the worst from it. And I just really hope that doesn't happen here. Would you be willing to help me with this?
If I can.
Oh, that'd be great, Matthew. I appreciate it so much. So much. Well, listen, man, I really like you, and I really liked your church when I visited. So, I won't actually be there this weekend, but I should be back next weekend. So, you know, hopefully we can sit down and you can get to meet my children.
Yeah, look me up when you're here.
Yeah, my Teenage Mutant Ninja children. Just kidding. They're not mutants or ninjas. They are teenagers, though. Teenage Mutant Ninja Children. Yeah. Exactly. Well, listen, Matthew, it's been a real pleasure talking with you. And I don't want to keep you longer. I know it's getting late. You're probably ready to go home.
Yeah, I've got some kids coming to meet me here. So, yeah, waiting on them to get here.
Oh, excellent. Well, listen, I'm going to let you go. Like I said, it's been a pleasure talking to you. And God bless you, Matthew, and I hope to see you soon.
All right, man. Take care.
Thanks, Matthew. It's been peachy, my friend. Okay, God bless you, Matthew.
It's been peachy.
See ya.
Okay, bye-bye.
Oh.
That's awesome, dude. My favorite is the perpetual flesh of hair almost the roof of my mouth.
I just like all the singing.
Yeah. It was very difficult to keep that voice the whole time.
It's kind of reminiscent of the sound.
The church is Matt.
It's playing again. Sorry. Hey, Matt. I'm like, how did you get called? So, Matt Baxter, I love you. Sorry. And by the way, your wife helped me set that up, so you can thank her. Thank you, Elizabeth.
I love you guys. In on with us. Awesome job. Hey, yeah. So what church? Where can they go?
Village Church in Dyer, Indiana.
Right on. Okay, we have limited time left, and so want to talk briefly a little bit more, just a touch of the Gosnell stuff. Joy had something to say I thought was interesting to add as input to this, but I just want to stress to us as Christians, listen, obviously we're glad this man is no longer killing babies, so amen. Don't think that I'm not highlighting the fact that he's now stopped killing babies, but I don't think state-sponsored kidnapping for years of his life, coercive theft from the public to pay for his meals, shelter, and health care is a victory for anybody. There's no justice here. He took lives, and his life isn't being taken. Nobody's suggesting mob rule here, and we should, as a town, come out with our pitchforks and, you know, our torches and lynch the man. That would be sinful, and that's what Jesus is talking about when he talks about eye for eye, tooth for tooth. That is the duty of the civil magistrate. And our justice system enacts unjust statutes. Don't tell me, as a Christian today, that you stand for social justice, and you're willing to give these guys a pass on this. Social justice has a lot more has a lot more to it than simply giving water and food to people. We have to look at the judges in our system and say, that's corruption. That is injustice. Nobody received justice here. Nobody.
Right.
No justice has been served, and it's our legal system that does that. Listen, you can't tell me that all of the Word of God applies to all of life, and then all of a sudden allow this stuff to happen and say nothing to it. Be salt, Christians, on this issue. Joy?
Oh, well, I was just thinking, after we did our little short segment there, I was thinking about, like, the common appeal to this whole anti-death penalty, anti-capital punishment thing. And sort of, I was just trying to think about what it would be like to hear Gosnell's representation, legal representation. What sort of things did they say? While they were talking about the sentencing, like, yeah, life versus the death penalty,
right?
Like, what, as a lawyer, what kind of appeal do you make to a jury or to a judge or whoever you're appealing to when you're defending someone that not only I mean, I think it's very well accepted that he killed babies that were outside of the womb. Mm-hmm. But somebody who's in that sort of field, like, it seems like it would just be just weird mm-hmm. and wrong. And I can't imagine what they, it would just be the strangest thing ever, I think, to hear someone plead for the life of a man. Like, he did all these horrible things, but we should not kill him. Mm-hmm. And this, I mean, it's a pervasive idea that, yeah. that people are against capital punishment. There are huge, I mean, there are like commercials, billboards and stuff that are, especially a lot of them in other countries right. that are, you know, just these big campaigns right. against the death penalty.
Right.
But when you really think about it in the context of someone actually pleading for the life of a murderer, mm-hmm. like where, I don't know.
Yeah,
I guess.
And someone might say, someone could say, Joy, they could say, well, I don't think that our justice system does a good job with capital punishment. So I don't want anybody that's not really a murderer to get capital punishment. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say, of course, I agree with all that. Amen to that. Yeah, of course, of course. But if we follow God's system of justice and witnesses and everything else. But see, this Gosnell case is different. And it's not even that category of a person that might not really be guilty.
Yeah.
Okay? He said, yeah, I did it. Mm-hmm. You know, I snipped the back of their spines. But he's saying, I don't agree, it's murder.
Yeah.
But it is murder, and you've agreed to it. There's witnesses. There's evidence. We've got the bodies. You've admitted that it was your hand that did it. And he's just saying, I just don't think that it's really murder. I mean, I'm an abortion doctor. That's what we do.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we're saying, no, you've been convicted of murder. So if anybody, he should get the death penalty.
Yeah.
That's justice, life for life. You've killed thousands of babies. We've charged you for what? There's a few counts here. We've said you're legitimately guilty. How about one? Can we get? Yeah. How about one? Which is, he deserve the death penalty for one baby that he severed their spine? One? Yes. What's wrong with us today as a church? What is wrong with us that we allow this stuff to happen and we just settle for it? We say a murderer like Gosnell gets life in prison. And I hate that the answer of Christians is deplorable. People have said even on my page, well, he's going to get it in prison. People are not going to take too kindly to a guy that kills babies in prison. They're going to give it to him. That's murder.
Yeah.
We shouldn't say, well, they're going to give it to him in prison. I'm not okay with that.
Prison rule.
Yeah.
Why we have a government.
Mob rule.
And a justice system so that we just send them to prison so that they can be a victim of mob justice.
Mob justice, which is murder. I'm
That's
not okay
insane.
With that. Christians don't support that to say, well, the prisoners are going to get him in jail. No. You talking state-sponsored slavery and captivity so that he now is murdered by others? I'm not a supporter of that. I think the civil magistrate should execute justice. You killed babies, you lose your life. The church should come in underneath this, preach the gospel to Gosnell on his way out. But in the end, he needs to face justice before God. Either it was given to Christ, or he needs to face the hand of justice of the civil magistrate that says to him, you kill babies, you lose your life. What is wrong with us as Christians that we say nothing about this? The gospel answers all of life. It speaks to salvation, and it speaks to our world. It should transform whole societies, and that includes our justice system. Christians, stand up. ApologiaRadio.com with Luke Pierce and Joy Tembe. Peace out.
Peace out.